Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127-games.com. Welcome back to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Here at Wargaming Recon, we talk about historical and New England gaming. On today's show, episode 80, I have some thoughts for you about Civilization IV colonization. I'm also going to be doing a little bit from the mailbag, covering stuff that we talked about in the past two episodes, which were a top five list on whether you should or should not shop at your friendly local game store. Then I have a little bit of news for you, and that's going to end up wrapping up the episode. So let's jump right in and talk about Civ IV colonization. I am a big fan of Sid Meier's Civilization. I think Civ II is probably one of my favorite computer games of all time. Cross-platform, cross-genre, it's so fantastic, right? It covers it all. It allows you to play just about any nation you want. You can bring it all the way from the time of, you know, whatever BC, the founding of Ur and Babylon, all the way up to the Space Age. And over the years, there have been different iterations of Civilization. Of course, Civ II, which I had just mentioned, and then Civ III, Civ IV, which I'm going to get to in a second, and Civ V is the newest one. Each one of these kind of updates the graphics, adds more functionality, and supposedly increases the gameplay. Now, I played Civ V, and it's a good game, but not my favorite. Civ IV really struck a chord with me because it reminds me of how I felt playing Civ II. It has a same kind of feel, like it's been updated. So you have the advancements that have now become a part of computer gaming. So you have better graphics, you have increased gameplay, and all these kind of things. And it's definitely a different game. It's updated, it's new, it is better. But it has that feel for me of Civ II. Now what I want to talk about is an expansion for it. It's called Colonization. I just got it not too long ago for my Mac. It's been released on the App Store, and I know this is an older game, but what I like is that a lot of these games are now having versions come out for Mac. They're coming out for OS X. I use my iMac for just about everything. I'm using it right now to podcast. And a lot of these things are on there, so Colonization had come out for it. Besides being a big fan of Civ II, and most of the Civ games, Colonization really intrigued me because of what I'm trying to do with the Dead Hampton Revolution. For those of you who are new listeners to the show, let me just give you a brief rundown of what the Dead Hampton Revolution is. Dead Hampton is a fictional campaign, a what-if historical gaming campaign that I've been working on. I'm creating rules, and we'll be running this campaign for some buddies of mine and myself. We'll be playing it using, I think 10mm figures is what we're going to be using. We'll be using the Black Powder rule set, and we'll be playing this down at Battleground Games and Hobbies in Abington, and sometimes, as the case might be, Plainville, and we might even play some games up in Westboro at the Wiz. So we're just kind of doing this, have some fun, use the Black Powder rules, and the whole fictional campaign is modeled on and based off of the American Revolution, the War of American Independence, as those of you across the pond would say. So it's all modeled upon that, and I'm really intrigued with this whole world of colonization, the colonial American times. All of that kind of stuff is really of interest to me. It's been of interest since college, way back when I, you know, went to college, and I was like, I want to be a history major. I want to be a politics and history major. I always loved colonial American times and colonial American history. So this is of a big interest for me, and Civ IV colonization allows you to take the helm of one of four European powers who has decided we want to colonize the New World. So you have the choice of either being a colony for England, for France, for the Netherlands, or for Spain. I know there's only four to pick from, and there's tons of other European nations that were trying to colonize, trying to conquer the New World. And I understand and I know that colonies and colonizing and all the stuff that goes with that, it's controversial, even though a lot of this happened so long ago, that not everything that happened then is or are things that could be morally justified. They may not be completely ethical. And I know it's a sore spot especially up here, where I am in New England, because it's one of the first areas for the English that was colonized, and the treatment of the Native Americans, not always what should have been done, and not always done in a way where another individual, another person should be treated. And I'm not going to be touching on any of that. The game does not condone any of that. The makers of the game had come out and they said, you know what? This is just a game for people to play, and it's up to the individual player to do whatever actions they want to in the game that they feel are morally justified. And I'm going to leave it at that. But I do want to say that if you play as Spain, you get a bonus to your conquistadors. It's historically accurate, a bonus. So the intention is that you, as the Spanish colonies, are going to go and make war on the natives and conquer them. You're going to slay them. You're going to take what they have and so forth. And if you're playing as the Netherlands, you're going to get a bonus to your trade. Trade is very important in this game. I'll get to that in a little bit, but you're going to get a trade bonus. As France, you're going to get a diplomacy bonus. You're going to want to make peace with the natives and form cooperative relationships. Maybe you're going to trade with them so you can get furs and other things that you need. You might need food or sugar or whatever commodities happen to be there. And you might give them things like horses. You might give them trinkets. You might give them guns. Whatever the case happens to be. You might set up missionaries and then get some natives to become converted colonists. Or you might play as England. You might be able to play and have either George Washington or John Adams as your governor. And your bonus is an immigration bonus. There is religious unrest in England. So you have people fleeing. You have pilgrims fleeing England, coming to your colony and looking for a better life in the New World. Religious freedom for those who they feel should have religious freedom. So those are the four nations you can pick from and the different bonuses you get based on your nation. The goal of the game is to build up your nation, your colony rather. You want to build up your colony. You have to deal with your homeland, your motherland. You have to deal with the natives. You then need to get to a sufficient point where you can declare independence and then fight your own war of independence and win. You need to become your own independent nation. And it sounds interesting, and it is, but it's not very easy. I've played this a few times, and I played as England each of the times. I've tried it with John Adams as my governor, and I've tried it with George Washington as my governor. Each different governor for each of the different nations has different pros and cons, different things that they give you. And on top of that, throughout the course of the game, you can recruit what they are calling founding fathers. These founding fathers are, of course, people who were greats for the different colonies and throughout the different time period back then. But you are not restricted to individuals who would have been just for your particular nation. So, for example, if Ben Franklin comes along and you're playing as Spain, Ben Franklin can be one of your founding fathers. And whatever founding father or fathers that you happen to get, they give you bonuses that apply throughout the course of the game. Maybe they give you extra colonists. Maybe they give you more guns, or they give you different stuff and allows you to hopefully go and win the game. Now, I've made some observations. The first off is that colonies are very dependent on their homeland. When I played as England, especially in the early game, you have your capital colony, capital city, and you might branch out and build one or two others. But a lot of the things that you need, you have to engage in trade. You have to trade with the natives, of course, but most of the stuff that you need, the manufactured items, you can only get from your mother country, your homeland. You might need soldiers, and maybe you don't have the guns or the people that you can give your weapons to your colonists to turn them into a soldier. You don't have the horses to give to turn them into dragoons. You don't like cavalry. But you can go to your king and you can say, oh, monarch, I need some extra help. Well, we're unguarded here in the New World. Can you help us? And they may or may not say, okay, you can have whatever. You can have an infantry unit, but it's going to cost you X amount of gold. You can have a cavalry unit, again, X amount of artillery, whatever the case may be. Or they might say, do you know what? We're not going to do that for you. On top of that, whenever you send a ship or ships to Europe, back to your home country, you can engage with trade. You can trade for Anything from tools to guns. I keep on mentioning guns. It's important. Food and cloth and all sorts of stuff. You can also pick up new colonists. You can pick up immigrants who are wanting to leave the home country and come to your new colony. Maybe it's just taking a little too long for you to get one that you need. So you can go and you can rush one along, and it costs you money to rush one along, and then they will be ready. You put them on your ship, and then it takes X amount of turns. They come and appear on the map, and you bring them to your colony, and they become a contributing member of your colony and go off and do different things. In addition to trade, you want to produce stuff. You can have just regular colonists who aren't skilled in anything, and they can be farmers, they can be fishermen, they can make beer, they can make cigars or whatever. But you can also eventually build a school and get a trained colonist. You can take one of your unskilled laborers and put them into school, and when they're out, you can say, "Do you know what? I really need a master tobacconist because I want to make lots of tobacco and sell it to the natives and sell it back to the home country. And once they go back and everything, I'm going to make tons of money, and that's going to allow me to get other things that I need." Or maybe you're going to make rum because you have lots of sugar, and you can do whatever your heart desired, basically. In addition to trade, you really need to have a strong, positive relationship with the natives. If you don't, you're going to find it's very difficult to transport goods between your cities because the natives will rise up, they'll attack you. It's hard to beat them because your troops, if you have any, are probably not doing very well. They're not going to have much experience. They're going to be basically unskilled volunteer kind of levels, conscript level of forces. Now, at the same time, it doesn't hurt to do some combat with the natives because that will allow you to get that experience so that when you declare independence, your forces won't just be green. They're not going to be like, "Hey, what's this? Is this a gun? Oh, am I supposed to look down the barrel? Oh, I just shot myself in the face." They're going to know how to use their weaponry. They're going to know how to do stuff. They're going to have capabilities that allow you to hopefully defeat and get your independence. And then, of course, you have to engage in that plight for freedom. One of the things that your cities can do is they can create what they call our bells, Liberty Bells. You can assign people to certain jobs that will generate Liberty Bells. You need to get a certain percentage of the residents of all of your cities, of your entire colony, to support Liberty. And once that happens, and I think it's like 50%, but once that happens, once you reach that level, you can then go ahead and declare independence. And you write your constitution, your draft, or whatever. You choose your government type, and then you're gonna engage in warfare because your home country is not gonna want to see the colony go away. If you're playing as England, England wants New England, its colony, to be part of there and give all its stuff, funnel it back to the home country, pay those taxes and everything. And it's just, it's really cool to experience this and get down to this kind of level because in a way you're almost living what it could have been like. It's not, 100% exact, but it gives you a feel for it. And as someone who's trying to do something like this, of course not computerized in this way, but trying to do something like this in my Dead Hampton Revolution campaign, it gave me some cool ideas for different things to do. Like I said, I played this a few times. I really enjoy it. I'm a huge fan of Civilization. I'm a huge fan of Civ 4, and I really like the colonization expansion. But it is difficult. I have not yet won, and that could just be me. Maybe I'm just a bad gamer. I'm not good at this game, maybe. But I found it very difficult. I'm still trying to find my way around it, and after numerous hours of playing this, it seems that it has a steeper learning curve than I had expected. I think it's something that you might enjoy, and I do recommend this game. If you have Civ 4, I hope you will go and pick up this expansion. You might have it for the PC, and you can just go and buy the hard copy, the game with on the CD or DVD, whatever the case is, and install it in your machine. Maybe it's on Steam, I'm not positive about that. But I do know that it is on the App Store. So if you have a Mac, whether it's a MacBook, an iMac, whatever you're using, if you have an Apple computer, you can go on the App Store, look it up, download it, it'll install, and then you can go ahead and play. It is an additional cost, so you need to buy Civ 4, which costs whatever, it's the main game, and then you need to buy this expansion. So it's an added cost, an added download. I think it's worth it. It's pretty cool. And like I said, I like it a lot. It gave me some great ideas for the Dead Hampton Revolution, which I am not going to reveal right now. I don't want to give too much away, because I know the guys playing in the Dead Hampton Revolution do listen to the podcast. So, Adrian and Court, you will have to be kept in the fog of war for the time being. So, those are just some thoughts that I have on Civilization IV, Colonization. Like I said, it's a good game, and if you want to find out how you can get it and links to all that kind of stuff, head on over to the show notes for this episode. You want to go to wargamingforums.com/WR80. That's right. wargamingforums.com/WR80. And that'll bring you to the show notes for this episode. And you can find links to information about Civ 4 colonization, Civ 4. And I'll, of course, have a link up there to all the content that I put up about the Dead Hampton Revolution and just all that kind of stuff, so you can see what's going on and get used to different things. Now I want to move on, and I want to give you some news about an exciting thing that's happening. It's kind of like, you know, an announcement. It's stuff that's going on internally, may not impact you as much, but I think you might find it of interest. For a while now, I've wanted to have a new logo created for the blog. It's the logo we have right now, it's perfectly fine, it's okay, it does the job or whatever, but it's not really geared for all the things that I use it for. I use it on the blog, I use it on iTunes. iTunes has a bunch of different formats that it likes and sizes depending on what it's being used as. I use it on t-shirts, I use it on business cards, I use it on all sorts of stuff. And the logo, as it currently stands, is not intended for that. So I was talking one day with Mr. Jeremy Costu, who is from Mighty Night Gaunt. He's a graphic designer by day. He does really cool work out in California designing layouts and stuff for people who want solar panels for their businesses or their homes. And by night, he does all sorts of graphic design for himself. He does work on role-playing games, and he's done a lot of stuff over at Troll in the Corner. So that's how I got to know him, because he created the logo for my other show, Geeks Explicitly. Thought he did a fantastic job. And I said to him one day, Jeremy, you know what? I really could use a new logo for Wargaming Recon. Do you think you could help me out? And so we talked about stuff back and forth, and he came up with some things, and I was like, well, let's, you know, do this or change that or whatever. And I was like, well, how about I just tell you more? Like, I can't tell you what I want, which I know is really annoying, but let me tell you what the show is. Let me talk around the subject, so to speak. So I explained what the show is, how we cover historical gaming and New England gaming, and go to conventions and talk about those and give reviews and just all that sort of stuff. And then he worked hard at it. He spent lots of time working at this thing, and he came up with a fantastic first draft, something I never would have ever expected. And he completely blew me away. Jeremy's very talented, and he's just an amazing guy. So if you ever need him to do work, you need anything graphic designy, you need a new logo or whatever, I strongly recommend you check him out. I'm going to have a link to him in the show notes, but his website is mightynightgaunt.com. That's mightynightgaunt.com. Again, I'll have a link in the show notes so you can go directly to his website. And he's fantastic. I don't really know what else I can say about him. But the first draft needed a little bit of tweak into it. He had some text in there, and the text was a little hard to read. But then I said, well, you know, maybe we can try some stuff. And then he went ahead and he created a second draft. And the second draft's better, and he's working on the final draft, or what I think will be the final draft. I'm very excited about it. Now, I'll have what the most recent draft looks like in the show notes, so you can definitely see it. But I just want to explain it a little bit for those of you who won't have the time to go to the show notes. There's a gray background, and the top right corner are hexagons. And the hexagons, some are green, some are blue. It's indicative of a battle map. And the bottom left corner, there are hexagons that are kind of like a dirty sand color, and some that are yellow, again, indicative of like a desert kind of terrain. In the middle is a partial sphere. It kind of reminds me of the Death Star in some ways, because it's almost like there's this globe and it's not fully formed. On it are different colors of gray squares. Almost to me seem like they represent land masses and oceans. And in the top half, there are some stacks of varying height of red chips or circles, almost like army markers. It kind of makes me think of Risk a little bit. In the bottom half are black ones. Again, different stacks of different heights. And in the middle, in big bold letters, are the words Wargaming Recon. I think it's fantastic. Your eye really is drawn to the text. It's drawn to the globe and the chits that represent the armies or whatever. And at the same point, although it really fits in with everything that I cover here on the show, it's not tied into any one particular thing. It would be very easy to just slap a tank on there, right? But what if, you know, I'm stop talking about tanks and I start talking about other types of games? What if I start spending a lot of time talking about Hail Caesar, for example, or Ancient Roman Warfare? Well, tanks aren't applicable, but this logo as is something that can stand a long time. And once final approval comes out and Jeremy does whatever, he will then create this in different formats to fit all the different needs for iTunes, to fit needs for t-shirts, for the big banner for the blog, for stuff on Facebook and things on business cards and all over the place. I'm very, very excited to it. And then on top of this, I was actually excited because a listener, Mr. Derek Lloyd, I sent him the thing and showed him what it was, and he commented that he thought the second draft was cool, but that the text was a little hard to read. So then he went ahead and made some different versions that he thought might be improvements on the readability for the text. So I want to thank Derek for his work on that, and I've shared that. If you want to see this stuff easily, again, it'll be in the show notes for this episode, or you can head on over to Google+, and also on our Facebook page. We have that up right now, but it will be on the show notes for the blog. So like I said, we're going to have this new logo coming out. I want to thank Jeremy for all the hard work he's done on it, and we're still working on it, and we're going to get there. It'll be out soon, and once it is, I'm going to have it all over the place for everyone to see. I'm very, very excited about this. It's something that I've wanted for quite a while. Jeremy just gets it. He has this immense skill set, and he just, I don't know how he came up with what he came up with, but it's perfect. It's perfect. So thank you, Jeremy. And again, if anyone needs some graphic design work, you should really get in touch with Jeremy Costu. I'll have a link to his website in the show notes for the blog. So you should head on over and find out what he's doing and see what other stuff he's done. And maybe he can do something for you, because I'm very pleased with his work, and I think you might be too. Now I want to move on to the mailbag. Like I said at the start of the show, today's mailbag basically kind of covers some response, well, a response to the episode I did beforehand, which was episode 79, 5 Reasons You Should Shop at Your Friendly Local Game Store. And it also kind of deals a little bit with the episode before that, episode 78, 5 Reasons You Should Not Shop at Your Friendly Local Game Store. And you can find the show notes for each of those by going to wargamingforums.com/WR79 and wargamingforums.com/WR78. So I am delighted to say that Adam of fencingfrog.blogspot.com sent me some feedback. And Adam, thank you very much for the feedback. I also want to definitely recommend that you check out Adam's blog. He goes and games at the Wiz just about every Sunday, as far as I can tell. Plays all sorts of historical games, whether it's Flames of War or things with the Black Powder rulebook or whatever. Takes pictures and puts up little battle reports and everything. A lot of fun. I think you'll enjoy reading what he has to say on there. So be sure to check out fencingfrog.blogspot.com. Again, I'll have a link in the show notes. But Adam says that he has a few reasons for why you should shop at your friendly local game store. He gives 3, actually. So the first one that he gives is that the game store pays for the shipping. A lot of internet deals vanish when you take into account the cost of shipping. Number 2, buy where you play, especially if you play for free. The local game store is your local bar. Sure, you can drink at home, but it's more fun to have a watering hole to gather at. If you don't spend money there, it will close. Number 3, Small businesses, like the local game store, are good for the community. Yes, the same item may cost a little more, but the money supports the store. It pays its employees, who then buy other products in the communities, maybe even from the company you work for. Even the annoying sales tax that you may or may not have to pay helps to look after the local community. The same money sent over the internet to a faraway place does the same thing, but it does so in a place that probably does not impact you. Adam, I think you raised some really good points. You go online and you see a deal for whatever, an army, a book, or whatever, and they're like 40% off and this or that or whatever. But then you may not pay close enough attention at first glance to see that the shipping eats up all or more of the savings. So you tack that shipping on to the cost of the item you're paying, and it looks like you're getting a great deal, but then you're like, oh, I'm paying X amount of dollars shipping, and that's way more than what it would cost for you to buy the item at your friendly local game store. You go there, you're paying sales tax, or maybe not, you're buying the item and you're supporting your local community, and you're doing it for probably less than what you would actually pay as an end result for that online vendor. I agree with him too that game stores are not just a place to shop. They are a community. They're building community. This is one of the things I talked about in episode 79. Local game stores build community, and that can't be said as much for online vendors. So if you're going there, you're playing there, you're hanging out there, you're doing all sorts of stuff there, not all game stores allow you to play for free. I think every game store should, but not all do. And the reason is that they figure it's kind of like a cover charge, that if you don't go and you don't buy anything else there while you're at the store playing, at least they made a few bucks off the fact that they provided space for you to play, they provided a table, they provided terrain, and that you were able to play there, even if you didn't buy a single thing there, that you gave them a few dollars or whatever the case happens to be. But most game stores, and hopefully, in my opinion, all game stores should not charge you to play there. It's good for business for them to have customers come in, see that you're playing, see the games on display. It's basically like a free demo. It doesn't cost them anything. You're showing off the games that they sell, and it's beneficial to them. But it's also beneficial to you because, like I talked about in the episode before this, you really can build a lot of good friendships while you're at the game store. It's really good for you to get out there. So I definitely agree with you, Adam. And then number three is also true, because you figure if you're buying something at online vendor XYZ or big box store or XYZ, right, all that money goes back to their home office, wherever that happens to be. And maybe it's in America, maybe it's in some third world country, maybe it's, you know, wherever else. And it's going and it's helping out there, but it's not helping your community. If you go to your local game store, it's probably in your community or one nearby, and you're giving them money, and like Adam says, that money, it's flowing locally. It's being distributed locally. It's helping things locally so that maybe the employees there, they're going and they're buying gas down the street. So that money's going to the gas station. It's helping the people who live in the area who have a job there. They're going down and they're buying something from the local restaurant, the local eatery. Again, it's helping people who live in the community who have a job at that restaurant and so forth and so forth and so forth. I don't want to beat this and, you know, beat a dead horse, but Adam really hits on some great points there. So Adam, I want to thank you for your points as to why you should shop at your friendly local game store. I also want to say that if anyone has any other ideas or things that they want to talk about with this topic, I'd love to hear from you. Please send me an email. You can reach me at cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com. Of course, you can leave a comment on the show notes for this episode, or you can find me on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on G+. We're on Pinterest. You can leave comments anywhere on there. I'd love to hear what you have to say about this issue. I think it's a very important issue, and it's one that, you know, I think it's so easy to be an extremist one way or the other, where either you're like, we can only shop at our local game stores, never buy online, never buy at the big box store. Or you're like, I will only ever buy online or only ever buy at the big box store and never at the friendly local game store. I gotta say, for myself, I think there's a better middle ground in there. And it's something that I've kind of talked about, a year ago, I guess. And a lot of controversy arose when I wrote that, the thing I'm about to mention. So I'm a little hesitant to mention it, but I wrote an article titled Pay Where You Play, And I put it up on the blog, and again, it was about over a year ago, I guess, and I'll have a link to it in the show notes, where I basically, in this article, say that I think it's important to buy locally if you can at your friendly local game store, but I also think it is acceptable to buy online, that the local game store may not always have what you need, or it just might not be feasible for them. There are, you know, other reasons, and I'm not going to go into all of them, but I feel that there are reasons where it's acceptable to buy at the box store or online, just like I think it's important and necessary to buy locally at your friendly local game store. I think you need to do both. It's not something that most people will say, and I might get some hate mail out of this, and hopefully not. Hopefully any criticism is constructive and respectful, and that's what I'm looking for. But it's what I do believe. At the same point, I want to quote Steve Jackson from Steve Jackson Games, and I'll have a link to his whole quote in the show notes. But he said once, "Remember, gang, support your local retailer or he'll close his doors." And I think he's right, because if you don't support them, they can't stay in business. It's very difficult when you figure in the rent, the cost of employees, cost of health insurance, and just all these other expenses. It's much more difficult for a brick-and-mortar store, for your friendly local game store, to stay in business than it is for some big box store or it is for an online vendor. So I want to just remind you about all that. And again, I'll have links in the show notes. Finally, I want to give you a reminder that you can, I was going to say that we have on, but that you can get most of our current episodes on Wargame Vault. You can quote unquote buy them for free. It's not costing you anything. You can buy them for free on Wargame Vault. So while you're doing your shopping for other things on there, you're getting your latest updates for whatever games you like, you're buying digital downloads of your RPGs or whatever. If you're on Wargame Vault or DriveThruRPG or whatever, you can buy for free episodes of the show. And we have, I think, 5 up now, 6 up now. It'll be more by the time you listen to this. My goal is to get each new episode up on there as soon as it releases. And then I'm trying, emphasis on the try, not really succeeding each time, but I'm trying to get at least one older episode up every week or every other week. So that in addition to adding the new content, the old content's being there, so that people can then quote-unquote buy again. It costs you nothing. You can quote-unquote buy it on there. And then while you're doing your shopping, you just put it in your cart, you do your checkout, and then you'll download the audio file and you got it on your computer, put it on an MP3 player, whatever the case happens to be, and listen to it. So you can go directly to our stuff on there by going to wargamingforums.com/store. That's right, wargamingforums.com/store, and that'll have all the stuff that I have up there right now, which happens to just be podcast episodes, but down the road, I'm hoping to add PDFs and other things that I've been doing with the Dead Hampton Revolution and all that sort of stuff. So down the road, that will hopefully be there as well, but right now, podcast episodes. So do your shopping, and then get yourself a free episode, free episodes of Wargaming Recon, and then listen to them. Hope you enjoy them. So far, it's been a big success, or for me anyway, it's big. Makes me feel like John Grisham, that each day I'm getting at least one or two emails saying that people have downloaded, quote-unquote bought, but downloaded, you know, one or more episodes of the show. And people seem to really enjoy it. So I've had, like I said, 5 or 6 episodes up as of the time that I'm recording this, but there will be more. And people seem to like it, so I will continue to do that. I think it's a great way to get the show out there. And I'm not interested in making money off that. I just kind of want this show to be put out in as many ways possible so that it's convenient and easy for all of you to get it, to listen to the show. I'm appreciative of the time that you give me, the time that you listen to the episodes and that you listen to the show. I really enjoy speaking with all of you and doing the show. So I just like doing all of this, and I just want to make it easy for you to listen to it and to say to your friends, oh, you know, I listen to this podcast that I really like. It's called Wargaming Recon. It's about historical and new gaming, and they do this and that. And so you can get it this way, but maybe your buddy doesn't have iTunes. He doesn't want to subscribe that way, although I'd love for iTunes subscriptions. Maybe they listen on Stitcher Radio, so they listen that way. Or maybe they only go onto Wargame Vault, so that way they can then download the episodes that way. Or whatever the case happens to be, listen live on our blog, wargamingforums.com. There's all these different ways that you can listen and get new episodes, get all the episodes that we have. So Wargame Vault is just one of those ways. And like I said, I'm very appreciative for everyone who's been using this new way. And if you are so interested in doing so, head on over to wargamingforums.com/store. Well, that's about all the time we have for this episode. This is episode 80. It's a huge milestone. I get to say, when I first started the podcast all those years ago, and with all those little breaks and hiatuses in between, I don't think I ever expected to get to episode 80. I never expected to get to episode 50. We got that milestone. We got episode 75 as a milestone. And episode 80 is another one. Before you know it, the 90th episode will be here. And then the big 100. I'm very excited for that. I know that's going to be coming down the road. I want to remind all of you that coming soon in an upcoming episode will be a special guest, Mr. Brent Newhall. He is one of the editors over at Troll in the Corner. He will be a guest on the show to talk about this game that he made. I talked about it a little bit ago, and it's a dice game where you kind of control this medieval army, and you create it however you wish. It's pen and paper, and you kind of go and you explore and you fight, and then you win or you don't win. But it's a really cool solo war game. He's going to be talking about that. And then before you know it, we will have Miss Angela Haru on the show again. That's right. She is the media director for TotalCon, which I will be attending in February. I hope to see you guys then. So she will be on the show. I was getting ready to be like, I'm really excited. But Miss Angela Haru will be on the show before you know it. And I, of course, will be talking that up as we get closer to that. So I want to thank everyone once again for listening to this episode, episode 80. And I want to remind you that we're all over the place, so you can find us here, there, and everywhere. So as always, after I do this little bit, you know you're going to hear some information about the Troll in the Corner podcast network. We're a proud member of that. It's a little pet project of mine as well. So you'll hear about all the shows on there. You'll hear the credits for this episode, so you know how to find us, leave comments, and all that kind of stuff. But I just want to remind you that, as always, keep on gaming. This show is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. If you enjoy this show, you might like some of the other podcasts on the network. Every Wednesday is a new episode of Indie Talks with Troll ITC owner Ben Gerber. Ben chats with people involved with indie games, movies, and much more. Every Thursday is a new episode of Geeks Explicitly, hosted by yours truly. All aspects of geek life are discussed. Wargaming Recon comes to you on the second and fourth Mondays of the month. I chat about historical and New England gaming. Monsters of the Shattered World, hosted by Troll ITC editor Brent Newhall, releases monthly. This story podcast details the adventures of a young scholar encountering strange monsters on a foreign planet. To learn more about the shows on TCPN, visit www.trollitc.com/TCPN.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
Geeks Explicitly, new episodes coming at you every Thursday with Drew and Jonathan talking about geek life. If you don't listen to Geeks Explicitly, then only at trollitc.com.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.